Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
I would like to introduce these folks. Today we have a talk, a presentation given by the Ethics Committee. I'm really kind of happy and proud of our Sangha for having such a thoughtful committee. We have a standing committee at the center, standing Ethics Committee of three people, and it's a three-year term. Stagger so that every year somebody comes off and somebody comes on, and it's really important, I think, as we grow as a community and in numbers and also in complexity, that we have this ethics committee in place to make sure that decisions are being made properly, and power is being used properly, and that there's a place to go to help resolve disputes that may come up in a Sangha. We've got David Steele here, and Joyce Hunziker, and Carol Spangler. Joyce was left off the list of when it was said who was going to speak today. So I want to welcome you in particular. I'm going to report that to the Ethics Committee just to see whether there's some attention there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Koshin. So the talk this morning will be on ethics, and I'll lead off and talk about ethics in Zen. And Joyce will talk about the history of ethics in this Sangha. And Carol will talk about what we're doing currently to sort of hone the guidelines for our ethics. In Buddhism, the Indian Sanskrit word for ethics is sila. And sila is one of the three pillars of Sangha, the others being meditation and generosity. What we should know as Sangha members and our responsibility is that the roots of our policy and ethics is the five precepts. And they are, number one, aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life. I will respect and honor all forms of life, people, animals, plants, minerals. Aware of the suffering caused by stealing, I will be generous and trustworthy. Aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct, I will honor romantic relationships. And aware of the suffering caused by lying, I will be truthful and trustworthy. And aware of the suffering caused by substance abuse, I will strive to keep a clear mind and study the roots of my craving. Now, in this Sangha, we take precepts, and when we do, we also take the Mahayana precepts, which has to do with wisdom. The first five had to do with ethics. The Mahayana precepts had to do with wisdom. And they are to manifest absolute self without the attachment to personal self. Number two, to manifest personal self without the attachment to absolute self. And number three is the interplay of the two, absolute self and personal self. What the Buddha taught was to wash yourself with both wisdom and morality. And in my mind, we have those two, and what can happen is that they can get out of balance. And the wisdom holder we can look at as being perfect. And that isn't so. So we can perhaps project ourselves onto the teacher, and that sets up an environment for abuse of power. So, in the West, more and more, Buddhism is looking at ethics as a government's responsibility, and we have. And so we have policies for reporting, first for standards of our teachers and Sangha members, and then a policy for whistleblowing and reporting and protecting those who do that, and then a grievance policy that is a step-by-step process to deal with the problem, should it arise. And Brother David Steindl Rast, who was a contemplative Catholic, and is a fan of the Dharma, looks at the five precepts with great respect. And what he says is that it's all about belonging, how to belong together. And he said, what thrills me about the five precepts is that it includes people and animals and plants, you know, and minerals, and it's like it invites everybody in. So it's like it's a wholeheartedly yes to belonging. Thank you. Joyce? Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. Joyce, maybe put it higher.
Higher?
Yeah.
Okay.
Joyce, would you like that?
Is that better?
Great.
So, a little bit first about the brief history of developing the ethics policy. And before I start that, we want to assure you that there are currently no issues of misconduct or any grievances that have been reported to our committee. We're talking today because it's the ethics theme for the month.
I meant to say that, yeah.
And to also give you a little bit of the background of how this came to be. Because if difficulties arise, or as Koshin likes to say, when difficulties arise, there needs to already be a deeply thought out process for addressing those problems. You don't have time to create policy when you're in the midst of a crisis. So about 4 or 5 years ago, Koshin and the board asked several members to create an ethics plan. And they wrote the charter, and they developed a code of ethics for all teachers. And teachers refers to Koshin and to any teachers that are invited to talk at sessions. They also made suggestions for future work that needed to be done. In 2015, an ongoing committee was formed consisting of 3 members who would serve a 3-year term. The ethics committee, by the way, is separate from the board. The largest task the committee was given was to create a policy for how misconduct or grievances would be resolved, not only involving a teacher, but also covering grievances in the Sangha. We spent about a year on this. Beth Glennon was in place of David at that time, and she helped develop this. We researched other Sanghas, and with their permission, we adapted some of their policies for our Sangha. The result is the Puget Sound Zen Center Code of Ethics and Grievance and Reconciliation Policy for Members and Participants. And this was adopted by the board in October of 2016. It's available on the PSCC website. And we'll pass out a handout at the end of the presentation that gives you specific directions on how to access that policy. Next, I'm going to speak a little bit about Carol's class that she took and some of the information she brought back from that. And that is about having an institutional protection agenda versus a justice-making agenda. And these are ideas from the Reverend Dr. Marie M. Fortune of the Faith Trust Institute. Koshin took this class, it's called Healthy Boundaries, in 2014. And Carol took the same class last fall, and she'll speak more about that in a bit. The class was specifically designed for leaders of faith-based groups, and it mostly speaks to sexual misconduct by a leader. But the elements apply to any misconduct by teachers or members as well. Institutional protection is, as it sounds, an attempt to protect the institution, and often, usually, ends up in a lose-lose proposition. The attempt to protect the institution or person to not own the problem causes harm to survivors, abusers, and the whole group. And we've seen a lot of this lately. Too much of this institutional protection in many areas. In reality, it extends the brokenness that was initially caused by one person to the whole institution. When people have trusted that the institution will act to protect them and others, and that doesn't happen, the trust is betrayed. And if nothing is resolved, the victim may consider civil action because they feel there is no other option. The counter to this institutional protection is to choose what Dr. Fortune calls the justice-making agenda. These elements were developed by talking to victims. They're things that were or would have been helpful to their healing. Keep in mind that some of these points are in relation to sexual misconduct by a leader. In our Sangha, when a grievance has been reported, we would also talk to the other person, the person being accused, and listen and hear fully their side. That wasn't included in the reporting from Dr. Fortune. You'll need to refer to the policy to see all of the steps that would occur in our Sangha. So, some of the elements that came up from talking to the victims are applicable to our Sangha, some are not quite as much. But the elements of justice making are, first, the victim tells someone, in our case, a member of the ethics committee, tells them the reality of the abuse. The person who is hearing from the victim needs to hear the victim fully, name the abuse, say it is wrong. Be with the victim, show compassion, and take steps to prevent further abuse to the victim and others. To confront the abuser and impose negative consequences. To make restoration of what was lost, to give a tangible means to acknowledge the wrongfulness of the abuse and the harm done, such as payment for therapy. Dr. Fortune says, Justice making is a different choice in responding, as opposed to institutional protection. When the institution keeps faith with its members, responds quickly and appropriately to a complaint, and it's necessary, takes action to protect people in the future, the victim is well served. The institution maintains its integrity. The abuser is called to repent, and there is the possibility of healing the breach caused by the abuser.
It's good. My part of the presentation is essentially about spiritual intimacy and reciprocity. It's kind of the relational aspects of ethics, I think. As Joyce said, this fall I participated in a 6-week online course through the Faith Trust Institute called Healthy Boundaries 101. There were about 20 students in the group from all over the country. Actually, one of them was from France. They were all Zen Buddhists. Through forum topic discussions, lectures, and weekly assignments, we shared knowledge and resources focused on best practices around healthy boundaries and appropriate boundaries between spiritual teachers and their students. For me, it was really a deep dive into a challenging and provocative topic. In the 5th week of the class, the topic of sex and the spiritual teacher was introduced. We read Scott Adelman's book. Ta-da! Mm-hmm. This is sitting on my bookshelf. Everybody's very interested. And we explored the topic both individually as well as a group. Yes, it is a book about spiritual teachers who have sex with their students. Why, when it's a problem, what we can all do about it. Ultimately, though, Adelman says the book is intended to create greater safety and spiritual intimacy between teachers and their students and among community members. I've thought a great deal about what this means, spiritual intimacy.
Whoa.
As he observes, as our teachers work with us, we let them deeply affect our hearts, guts, and heads, even our dreams. In healthy relationships, the student develops a deep and abiding trust in the teacher, and the trust is rewarded. I'm struck by the deep, loving, and intimate relationship that almost has to develop between a spiritual teacher and their student in order for the student to grow and actually transcend personal boundaries. I've been thinking about it as being, in the end, a love affair. The last chapter of this book is, it's an open letter to spiritual teachers. Before I share some of the excerpts from the letter, I want to define a spiritual teacher. Adelman suggests that anyone who works closely and one-to-one with others to help explore life's most important questions, live wholeheartedly, and find their spiritual way in the world is a spiritual teacher. The definition surely refers to Koshin. And I think to others in leadership and spiritual teaching roles in our Sangha. So as you listen to the excerpts from this letter to spiritual teachers, I'd invite you to consider how it might apply to you. Here's some of the excerpts from that letter. And this is, let's say, well, we're writing it to any spiritual teacher, and it might even be outside of the Sangha. All of us want and expect the best from you. We also want you to encourage the best from us, though you won't always get it. sometimes we'll project all kinds of things onto you, our hopes, dreams, fears, expectations, and fantasies. It's your job not to buy into any of our projections. Your role requires you to always act in our best interests. Over and over, breath by breath, we need you to return to your commitment to serve. If what you're about to do isn't in a student's best interest, don't do it. I like this one. We are always eager to take all you can give plus much more, so don't expect us to notice when you've reached your limit. So when I first read the letter, I loved it. It surely is all that I hope for from my spiritual teachers. It does make me, though, pause and consider my own role and responsibility as a student. Maybe what I think the letter lacks is reciprocity, the commitment to the student to also act in the best interest of the teacher. And I think these things are important for us to consider in our relationships with one another. So what would it look like to have a reciprocal notion of this? First, to honor boundaries around time, access, personal needs, and space. To be attentive to one's own behavior regarding physical expressions of affection, and especially aware if one is physically attracted to his or her spiritual teacher and experiences a mutuality in that attraction. Not exploiting the teacher for one's own emotional, sexual, or financial gain. And bottom line, a basic recognition that this is a two-way street. We have high expectations, but we also carry responsibility for all relationships to remain safe, healthy, and mutually satisfying. Members of a healthy spiritual community are honest, transparent, loving, and supportive of each other. Healthy spiritual communities live by two essential principles. Spiritual teachers are normal human beings. They may be wise, but they are not infallible. And community members are responsible to one another. They trust and respect each other and agree to not harm one another. Now more than ever, the world needs the healing power that comes from models of ethical practices and healthy communities. Hopefully these collective thoughts that we've shared help to underscore how our own code of ethics and policies serve us and keep our Sangha healthy. We are ultimately all responsible for living up to them. Thank you.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.